Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, hoj här kommer Karlsson. Karlsson, Karlsson, ingen faktiskt ingen annan Karlsson spelar jag så bra som mig.
Karlsson, Karlsson, Karlsson scores.
Karlsson, Karlsson, världens bästa Karlsson.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Welcome everybody to another episode of the Keeping Karlsson Fantasy Hockey Podcast, the longest running fantasy hockey podcast in the world, hosted by two guys who are former Keeping Karlsson playoff pool winners, though it's been a while, so we're going to be going to challenge Anthony, who's the returning champion here, to try to become the first two-time ever winner. I am your host, Elon Dubrovsky, and before we get to the playoffs, we still have another 5 days of NHL action after today, and Brian and I are going to look at all the latest news and notes. Oh, I gave up his name, but the guy with me who's going to go through it all, one tweet at a time, it's my very good friend, the co-host of this podcast, and the fantasy hockey robot. You know him, you love him. It's Brian Kom. Brian, happy to have you here.
Thanks. Surprise, it's me. And I also noticed you didn't ask how I'm doing. You almost struggled with how to leave. Thank you. I'm doing fine, by the way. I actually, you mentioned, Elon, you're coming to Ottawa in May. I started assembling a barbecue today. Ooh. I'm hoping it'll be done in 6 weeks by the time you get here. So I'm all set for that. I have leftover beer in the fridge from anyway, you're more than welcome. And everyone can come. If you know my address, you are welcome to come join the party. But we have a party on the show tonight. A lot of us have already been partying. Not me. Actually, I shouldn't say us, because I did not win my league. But so many people did. 43 winners in the Keeping Karlsson Ultimate Patron Fantasy League. We're going to shout them out through the episode. KKUPFL.com for more info. We'll open registration for season 9 in some amount of time. But there's other fish to fry before then, including those of you who are still playing for a title this week, and those of you who are learning and studying and doing your homework so that you can either keep the title next year or break the losing streak. So we are very happy that we are still a part of your routine. Thanks for tuning in. And Elon, I am so ready to go.
All right. So, Brian, did you win any leagues this year? I know you didn't win the Cupful, but did you win anything?
Well, that's such a rude question.
Oh, no. I just thought maybe you did. I wanted to give you a chance to break. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, so, like, you know, one side effect of paring down your total leagues is that
fewer chances to win.
Yeah. And, like, you keep the ones that are, like, competitive or meaningful. And unfortunately, like, I don't have any, like, bird leagues left. Although there's one that I've won many times. Like, I think I'm the guy to beat, and my team just didn't hold up. A lot of injuries and limited moves. That's my why I lost story, which we'll be asking for our listeners from at some point in the offseason. So if you think you deserve to win but didn't, or you lost for some unreasonable reason, we're gonna call those stories out soon. But yeah, Elon, I'm sorry. I'm not doing my part. I lost in I did okay, but I lost in all three leagues that I cared about this year.
Sorry to hear, but you know, I'm sure you'll be once again the top contender in all these leagues next year. And yeah, I famously lost the Cupful. I did win one league. It was funny, like as soon as I lost in Cupful and I realized I wasn't even going to make the consolation playoffs, like my brain, it's so funny how our brains work, where I just like switched, like I actually didn't care that much about Cupful. The league that I actually care about is my Dynasty League. Like that's the one that I'm actually the most passionate about, you know. So that's what we do to help, you know, deal with these losses. But okay, Brian, like you said, we have a lot to get to. I did want to mention the playoff pool quickly, just because the Keeping Karlsson playoff pool is the registration is going to be closed soon. Like the playoffs are probably going to start in a week for all I know. I haven't seen the official schedule, but the last NHL game is this Friday. So we're going to close registration on Friday, and then we're going to set up all the leagues on Fantrax. We're going to get the slow drafts going. It's going to be a blast. We've already talked about it on previous shows. You can go become a patron of Keeping Karlsson, keepingkarlsson.com/patron. It's just a buck right now. So, you know, just come hang out with us for the summer at this reduced rate to get all of our perks, including playing in the playoff pool. We're going to have a cool prize for the winner. I actually forget what the prize... I remember I won once and got a hoodie. I don't know if it was a hoodie again last year. But anyways, it's going to be a cool prize. It's going to be a lot of fun. If you're a patron, hopefully you've already signed up. It's like, and I made an announcement. I tagged everyone. So I've done my best to spread the word here. And if you're not a patron, come in. It's going to be a lot of fun. But okay, Brian, with that, let's get to it. Okay, we're presented by DauberHockey.com. We're going to be referencing Frozen Tools all throughout the show. But another site we're going to be referencing is Game Day Tweets, where we've got our great friend Shams, who's been retweeting up a storm over the past week of all the news and notes. Even Shams is like eliminated from his leagues. You know, no leagues. I guess that's a rude way to say it a little bit. His leagues are finished, and he's still, you know, doing the work of, you know, for all of us, just to help everyone do well. And I do my share of retweeting as well. It all gets filtered over at gamedaytweets.com. We were figuring like the best way, you know, we're only looking at the most recent, like we're looking for people to help for just next week. So we're just looking to look at the most recent tweets that have come out. You know, if you go to gamedaytweets.com, the main page, all the like lines, goalies, news, stats, they all just get combined onto one page. And now we have pagination on there. So you can just scroll forever, look at everything that's ever happened. And so, yeah, we're just going to kind of go through it for a couple hours until we run out of time. And then that will be the end of the show. So let's start at the top tweet here. The Avalanche are going to be playing the Ducks today. The game's going to start in around 10 minutes. The news here was that Brendan Vaught tweeted that Byram is still out with an illness. Hunt will be playing again tonight. So Byram's out. Makar, we know, is already out. So they already talked about it on short shifts. But if, you know, obviously Devon Taves is the guy you want, if he's out there. But like, he's not available in any leagues. Maybe Sam Girard now becomes more interesting just because there's like fewer Avalanche defensemen worth going after. So, you know, not huge news there. But yeah, I mean, the Avs obviously have their playoffs clinched. So they're not going to take any risks.
No, why would they? And I mean, Elon, you and I were talking pre-show about the Bruins, who have also decided to do the same thing, except Colorado still has their stars in the lineup, right? Like McKinnon and Rantanen are still in there. So if you have the defense, any defenseman on Colorado who's going to see significant minutes, and Elon, you mentioned them, Taves, Girard, then you could be in for a solid chunk of points if they're in the right place at the right time. And it's not just that, right? Like, these are good offensive players. They're just not always asked to play an offensive role. Devon Taves, by the way, Elon, I think I won our bet. Like, we had a bet like a couple months ago about his point pace over the rest of the year.
He did well. But to be fair, okay, I'm not saying that, like, you know, you deserve the win. Like, you were right, I was wrong. I'll just throw it out there that there was like a long stretch, like right after we discussed him, where I said, I don't know if he's going to be able to meet last year's points or whatever. And then like Makar got injured and he was on the top power play for a while. And I think that like helped a little bit. And that's like, I was assuming like with Makar in the lineup.
Yeah, I actually beg to differ. Taves has 6 points in his last 7 games and only 4 power play points on the entire season. So he might have squad. Like, yes, 2 of those power play points came in his last 10 games, so that helped. Maybe this means he squandered some opportunities as power play quarterback with Makar out. But Elon, he did it his way.
Okay.
And I think he's still, like, I agree. I'm not expecting, nor was I expecting him to return to the 70-point pace this year, but I don't think it's outlandish, even though Devon Taves is pacing for 47 points this year, that he can probably, I think 60-point upside is still there for Devon Taves, even if he's not a top power play quarterback.
I mean, not to waste too much time here, but I guess I don't even remember what the bet was, but I'm pretty sure I was like saying closer to 50 and you were saying closer to 60, and he did end up under 50.
I'm pretty sure it was me saying closer to 50 and you saying closer to 40.
You're definitely wrong, but whatever. We don't have time to argue, but you're definitely wrong about that. You said 60. I'm so positive. We'll have to go back and check the tape. But yeah, now that you brought it up, I think I actually won this thing. But anyway, we don't have time. Let's go to the next tweet here. Lucas Dostal in net for the Ducks tonight. So Gibson is out. Dostal is the guy for the rest of the season, I'd imagine, unless they're going to go play their backup, who was a guy named Eriksson Ek. I think Joel Eriksson Ek's brother, Ollie Eriksson Ek. He played a game. Anyways, probably Dostal is going to lose these games. The Ducks aren't very good. Dostal overall, like, I know he's like a high pedigree guy. Like, a lot of people are excited about him as the future goalie for Anaheim. He's played 17 games this year so far, 901 save percentage. Like, I think going into next year, I think it's fair to say at this point, you can no longer consider John Gibson like the volume option on Anaheim. You know, like, Gibson is like, yeah, the Ducks stink, but hey, Gibson, at least if you draft him, you know you're going to get a lot of games. I feel like you can't even say that going into next year. Like, I think this is the kind of situation, like, you know, we've seen some other teams, like, you know, in Varlamov and Sorokin, and for a while, it was, maybe it's not exactly, but anyways, I think next year is going to be the year where it becomes closer to a split. So I'd love to see John Gibson get traded somewhere.
Yeah, I think we'd all love that. I think his contract is prohibitive, so that doesn't work out too well. I'm not sure what makes you think for sure.
Well, not for sure, but I guess, yeah, I could answer.
I feel like Gibson is going to be the volume guy. Like, I think he has been through it with this Ducks team, and, like, one of the reasons is because they can't necessarily unload him. But, I mean, he was elite for a time, and I would my guess my assumption, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm working off the assumption that, hey, he was through it in the lean years with Anaheim, and I thought they'd be turning the corner this year. That didn't happen. But over the next 2-3 years, I expect them to turn the corner, and I expect them to still try and rely on him as much as they can.
I mean, I guess we're being contentious to start this show.
Yeah, sorry. But the key might be as much as they can, right? Because he hasn't proven himself to be very reliable, but neither has the team in front of him. Meanwhile, Dostal is sort of like, he's been okay. Like a lot of, like lately it's been good game, bad game, good game, bad game.
Yeah, but Dostal is a rookie. Like this is his first year. He finally made it to, like, he wasn't even supposed to be in the league this year, but then Stoli, the goalie, got hurt. Dostal's come up. He's been pretty good for a guy who wasn't even supposed to be here. And I think next year he'll be the second goalie. And I don't know. My hunch is that they're going to bring him in the league, not to sit on the bench all the games. He's not a backup. He's their future. And, but anyways, we'll wait and see. It won't matter because you're not going to want either of these guys probably for most of the season, because I'm sure the Ducks will continue to be bad until, you know, all their great defensemen that they have in the prospect pipeline are ready to go and actually make a difference.
Yeah. That we can agree on.
Okay.
Dostal, by the way, like is a pretty, like you're saying, like he's their future and he is a pretty well heralded prospect, right? He'll turn 23 in June, which means he could still be a couple years away from being given the reins. Goalies often, you know, you've got your Carter Harts and Thatcher Demkos, but generally goalies have to wait a little longer than most players to get their look.
Yeah, and I'm saying 50-50, or like maybe 60-40. Like, I just don't think it's going to be Gibson all the time, like usual. Anyways, all right, next tweet here, we got, we have game day stats where Shams and I tweet out when we see like an interesting stats tweet going on, and it goes right to the player's profile. And if you go to David Pastrnak's profile, you'll see a tweet that he scored his 58th goal, though that was the goal that gave the Bruins their 2-1 lead in today's game against Philly, which is still going. After that, he scored 2 more goals. He has a hat trick today. So that gave the Bruins a 2-1 lead. Yeah, he did score 2 more goals. Yeah, so now I guess he's up to 60. Well, that's cool. We should tweet Shams. We got to tweet something out about that.
It's at the top of gamedaytweets.com for me. Maybe you just need to refresh.
Oh, wow. Shams, he's on top of things. So yeah. Wow. Apparently, I was reading something about how this is the first season in a long time that there's been 2 60 goal scorers. Of course, Connor McDavid as well. Pastrnak, man, like we opened up a channel on our Discord for the Cupful winners to all just like celebrate with each other and a lot of funny dancing gifts and stuff. And someone asked about, like, you know, talking about where did you pick and like who did you get in your first round or whatever. And there was someone that just answered recently. I know I'm seeing a lot of someones and stuff. I should probably be giving people credit here, but I'm doing the best I can. But yeah, someone posted they got Pastrnak at like last pick of the first round. It was like they had like 14th. They went 14th, 15th with Pastrnak and Kyle Connor. You're definitely not going to get Pastrnak at the end of the first round, 14th overall next year. I feel like he's probably going to be top 4, top 5 in a lot of leagues, and for good reason, man. This guy just scores goals, takes shots. Like, that's what you want in a high-end fantasy pick.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, Pastrnak is basically back where he was heading into the 2020-2021 season, right? Going into that season, he was a top 5 no-doubter. Like, he was in that top-tier group, you know, the McDavid. Like, this year, it was McDavid, Matthews, Draisaitl, MacKinnon. Well, Pastrnak was a former member of that locked first-round group. And then he had a couple years where his shooting percentage dipped a bit, even though the quality of his efforts didn't really. And this is a guy that, like, Pastrnak takes so many shots, right? Like, he's 6 shots away from 400 on the season. He's averaging 5 shots a game, basically. And so a 2% downtick, like, that means you're just extra subject to variance as a goal scorer, right? A 2% downtick means that's every 2 games. If you're taking 5 shots per game, that's like less goals, right? So I think that's all that happened in the last couple years for Pastrnak is his shooting percentage was at 10 or 11% instead of the 12 or 13 at 5-on-5 that we're used to. One thing that went well for him that I'm not sure is going to hold is he participated on 82% of the goals scored at 5-on-5, which is, he's been around there. He sort of bounces between 70 and 80. So that's the high end. So I don't know if I'd say like, oh, next year Pastrnak's going to top this 111 point pace, but I could easily see him going for another 50 goals, 100 points. Although things also depend on where Bergeron is at, right? And how that impacts the power play next year if he returns. But Pastrnak also played like a good chunk of the season with, well, I was going to say with nobody, but like with Taylor Hall and David Krejci, who aren't nobody. And I guess his future also depends on Krejci. But I think he did. He did pretty well. Those are two very good players who might not be so fantasy relevant, but Pastrnak is like has proven that he's going to be fine regardless of who he plays with. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm not going to be like too worried about him, even if Bergeron's gone. If anything, that's just going to be a better chance that he's going to have that higher IPP, right? Like this year, probably he's in the higher IPP of points participation because, yeah, he's not playing with Bergeron and Marchand where there's a lot, you know, and then so sometimes then McAvoy gets an assist and maybe he's not in on the goal. Like now, like he's obviously the driver of his line and I'd imagine he will be moving forward for a long time because he's locked in for a nice long contract with the Bruins and I'm sure they're happy to have him. Okay, next up here, Joshua Cloak tweeted about how the Leafs, well, a lot of people tweeted this, but here's what we've got on the on the site. Matthew Nyes signed a 3-year ELC. A lot of people call this guy the Leafs' top prospect, and he's been playing at the University of Minnesota, and now he signed. This happened a lot. Luke Hughes also recently signed by New Jersey. I guess we'll get to him in a bit. But yeah, another one of these guys who's finishing up his season in university and like just in time. Like I don't know like what this Matthew Nyes' role is going to be for the Leafs in the playoffs, but he'll be around. Apparently, he's coming to Toronto. He's coming off this season where he had 42 points in 40 games with the University of Minnesota. I took a look at the league standings here. That was good for only 17th. So I guess it's like the NHL. Point per game isn't what it used to be. Top of the league, Adam Fantilli, who's a guy who's going to probably be taken second overall in this year's draft behind Bedard, is the vibe I've been getting. But anyway, enough about the prospects. Just, I don't know. There's nothing really fantasy relevant here. I don't even know if he's going to play next week, but maybe he'll play a game. And you know, I'm sure the Leafs will be happy to have some forward depth. Though I asked in our Discord, like if we're expecting Nyes to like actually be on the team for the playoffs, and Andy was saying he is expecting that it's going to be kind of like if we really need him, we'll play him. So maybe like you know he won't be in the lineup to start the playoffs, but if they lose a couple games, maybe they'll try to shake things up. But it'll be fun to see. You know, it's always fun when one of these highly heralded guys comes in.
Yeah, like and keep in mind he's the Leafs' top prospect, but he's still a second round pick, late second round pick, and almost a third round pick. And usually, you know, when you're looking for a player coming into the league as your top prospect, you are talking, you know, first half of the first round. Generally, if you're getting as excited as Leafs fans are getting about Matthew Nyes, and I'm not saying it's unwarranted. He's had a couple really great seasons at the University of Minnesota. He is about to, he'll be debuting, assuming he's a full-time NHLer next year. He'll be in his age 21 season, and I'm interested to see what he can do. I don't know that there's, I guess there's some room for movement in the top six, because we've seen plenty this year, and I think he's someone that'll be fun to see get a few games. And also, Elon, I don't know if you knew, but he, like Austin Matthews, Arizona native. Playing in Toronto, highly heralded prospect. So there's an Arizona connection. You know, maybe that'll help Austin Matthews stay put.
Maybe, or maybe they'll put them on the same line because they'll feel like they have like instant chemistry together. But we'll see. I think what will help Matthews stay put is winning a playoff series, either this year or next year. I feel like how, like, I don't know. I feel like I would leave otherwise.
On one hand, I feel like yes. But on the other hand, I feel like the more Matthews loses in Toronto, the more he has something to prove because sure. Like he, it's not like the team is garbage. Like the team isn't well constructed and they're not giving him a chance to win. Like, you know, I would describe the Edmonton situation with McDavid and Draisaitl for the last few years,
but not this year,
but not this year. No.
Mattias Ekholm. What an acquisition. Every time I read on Twitter about Mattias Ekholm, everyone's crazy, drooling crazy over this numbers. Guy.
Yeah. So, well, like, he's good. He's been good. Yeah,
you know, low tide. He had an article I saw just go up saying like he thinks he's the best defenseman, or he said like he just put up the last game was the best game he's ever seen from an Oilers defenseman since like Chris Pronger.
So name your elite Oilers defensive defenseman of the last 10-20 years.
Chris Pronger. I don't know. Like not only defensive, he also like he was like +6 I think in the game. But anyway, we're off the beaten path here. So we'll see what happens
Austin
with Matthews.
Matthews. Well, maybe if they lose, that chip on his shoulder, whatever. Right? This is not fantasy. This is just us being dudes talking about hot.
But it'll be fun if the Leafs could win. We'll see. Like the Tampa is beaten up. Their big acquisition that they paid like 6 picks for Tanner Jeannot. We'll get to that in a little bit. But he's hurt. Not fantasy relevant unless your league counts hits and you're going into next week and you're probably really annoyed about that. So that would be actually very fantasy relevant. But yeah, I feel like the Tampa really wanted to have Jeannot on there in their lineup for this playoffs. Maybe now it's not going to be the case, but we'll have to wait and see. Brian, okay, we're going to go to our first commercial break. I know you had a plan for this episode where you're going to throw out some lotting of all of our amazing cupful winners. Do you want to throw out some of them now before we go to our first break?
Yeah, Elon, I definitely want to shout out the champions. We'll do it through the episode, as I mentioned off the top. But how about we start off with our Kakupful champions from Tier 8? These are our new entrants to the Kakupful who crushed it in their first year, took on the competition. And I'm going to start with Tier 8, Clouston. Congrats, Akitak, a.k.a. McDavid's team. In Tier 8, Marts, our winner was Timé, whose team name was the Smokin' Monkeys. In Nygaards, it was the Stang B Canucks. In Dalen, it was Say You Say Miro. That's Jamie's team. In Tier 8 Backman, it was Pocketful of Shesty, managed by Kyle. In Tier 8 Knockbauer, it was Tavares Nabu Fighters, managed by Derek, who also had like some amazing statistical input about our third round reversal in the Kakupful this year, which we'll talk more about in the offseason.
And I guess we have to take it more seriously now that he's a winner.
Yeah, well, I mean, he clearly knows what he's doing and talking about. In Tier 8, Cameron, no sarcasm, which the team belongs to KMaz71. Congrats, you're a champion. In Melon, it's because it's Brady's night, took home the championship. That team managed by Tim L. In Pearson, it was Apple a Day Keeps Montour Away, managed by Luda.
Luda.
In Lamsa, we have Dwayne and Blaine Jetski, a co-managed team taking on first. Those are, like, it's hard to co-manage a team. Elon, you and me did it, and our friendship survived. But I notice you co-manage with other people now, and so do I. I guess we do enough fantasy together. Anyway, congrats, Dwayne and Blaine Jetski. The Goobs, taking home the title in Gronberg. Bunch of Pigeons, managed by Celtic, takes it home in Lund. Flugan Kusich Chickabullion in McLean. That's Will. If that's a joke, Will, I should ask you what it actually means. I probably should have asked for pronunciation before that. Gustafsson, Distinct Kicking Coleman, managed by Shredmontonian. And finally, our final Tier 8 division champion is JT Miller. I barely know her. A classic naming trope. In Olsen, and that team is managed by Shrine. Congratulations to all our Tier 8 rookie Kakupful champs. We look forward to seeing more from you in the higher tiers next year. And everybody else, we'll get to you later in the show.
Yeah, man. So impressive to just come in to the Kakupful, really tough league, and just win in year one. Congrats. I'm sure all these people will be naming it in future years in the higher tiers. They've all earned, I think, 3-tier promotions. They'll be all in Tier 5 next year. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough up top in Kakupful. But okay, Brian, let's take a quick break now. And when we come back, we'll continue going through. We're going to start with the Flyers and some drama going on there. You're listening to Keeping Carlson. Welcome back, everybody. We are going through tweets from GameDayTweets.com to cover all the latest news and notes happening in the NHL. And we are up to what's going on in Philly, right? They are playing this game against Boston today, actually, and they hung in there for a lot of the game. They ended up losing 5-3, not too bad, against the best team in the league, though Boston was sitting a few players. But hey, I don't want to take anything away from Philly. A lot of weird stuff going on with the Philly lineup. You know, Carter Hart was pulled from yesterday's game, and then apparently he had a quote being like, I don't think I deserved it, and then Hart also didn't play today, and that so whatever, that's some drama, I guess. The big drama, I think, though, is Tony DeAngelo not in the lineup today for the third straight game of being healthy scratched, and DeAngelo is someone who maybe Philly could have used because they were rolling only 5D today, so you just kind of think that it's not just about like performance, because I still feel like a healthy body, even if he's like not the best defensively, but I think your leading defensive scorer could come in handy against the Bruins. So we don't know, like Tortorella's being tight-lipped. I think something's going on. There's still 1 year left in this contract for Tony DeAngelo next year at $5 million. So I actually have him in my dynasty league. I'll be curious. Hopefully something comes out. I hope he's not gonna like be healthy scratched all year next year. I can't imagine he will be, but yeah, I'd be curious to know what's going on. But anyways, Brian, is he that bad? Like, I know like he hasn't been as good as he was in Carolina in terms of fantasy, like for obvious reasons. But he still had like 40 plus points, decent for fantasy. But now I guess, yeah, you have to wonder, is he now under the coach's skin, and is he going to have another situation like he had on the Rangers?
It's a big question, and it's surprising it took this long for things to get this way, in a sense, between DeAngelo and Tortorella, but to be fair, when things were going well, we're like, okay, yeah, maybe they do understand each other. Both have been much maligned for their personality, quote unquote, and you know how they behave and act towards others and off the ice and on the ice. And so maybe they get each other, they understand, and But now it's like, well, of course, they're not going to be a great fit for each other. So we'll see how this all shakes out. And if we get any more news or info about it, I mean, anything with John Tortorella is always strange. Like, he spent all that, like, several games in the press box watching. It's like, he wasn't sick. I thought he was sick. I thought that was the, he just wanted to see things from a different angle. Imagine any other coach trying to do that. In the NHL.
Like, Shams would also said that he was, like, wanting other coaches to get some experience.
Yeah. But come on. Like, no other coach could pull that off without a crazy amount of media questions and coverage and, like, ownership. Like, John Tortorella has just earned the right to be a... to be this wild card who just does what he wants. That's part of the deal, I guess, when you hire him. And he's made that clear. Anyway, part of that is now benching Tony DeAngelo, who, like, has had an okay season, not defensively, but that's not what you get Tony DeAngelo for. Although Tony DeAngelo might have the single biggest swing, single season swing in plus minus ever. Elon, do you want to guess what his like total?
Okay.
From, yeah.
So last year with Carolina, I'm guessing it was like great, like maybe like what, 20? 20.
Okay.
I'll say 20, and I'll say this year minus 32.
So you almost nailed this year. Minus 27, but okay. Last year plus 31.
Oh, wow.
So minus 58 swing for Tony DeAngelo this year. I really think that might be a one of a kind, a one in a generation.
You should
swing.
Look that up and tweet it, and then we'll retweet it at Game Day Tweets NHL. That would be a really good, or no, sorry, Game Day Stats NHL. That would be a really good tweet for that account.
Yeah, if anyone could find out, that would be so great. Yeah. And he deserves that minus 27 this year, by the way. He is awful. Opponents were 16% more likely to score with him on the ice than off. And last year, it was actually a similar story. Just the team around him and maybe the goaltending too was better. So he's god awful defensively, and maybe this is the moment where the coach is like, okay, we've seen enough. Like, it's time for us to stop making mistakes and play the right way. Tony, you got your 50 points. Congratulations, which is, a pretty good season, honestly, given all that happened and in Philly and the quality of the team around him. 2.5 shots per night still for DeAngelo. Pretty rosterable through the season, aside from that stretch where he was suspended for a couple games. But I would like to know more about what exactly has happened before I figure out where I'm going to slot him in on my draft board next year. But for now, I don't know. I'm not going to make any drastic changes. Like, if I'm looking at him next year, I assume still another 50 points, still some stretches of inconsistency, still is going to kill you in a plus minus league. But in the Kakupful, I traded for him and I was happy to have him on my roster for the time that I did.
Yeah, and hopefully anyone who had him on their roster right now, like for an ongoing playoff matchup, hopefully you dropped him after that first scratch and didn't just waste a spot all week long. I don't know. Maybe he'll come back for the next game, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's just done for the year. We haven't heard anything. All right, next up, we had a tweet from the Bruins before the game started, the line tweet here, where everyone wasn't playing, right? Like, so Bergeron, Krejci, Hall, who had just come back, McAvoy, Orlov, all didn't play today. Apparently they're like banged up, so obviously they're resting for the playoffs, trying to get healthy. They're going to obviously try to go on a cup run. In the meantime, the lines today, does it matter? I guess like the big thing that happened is that Tyler Bertuzzi is, you know, looking good. Like, you know, he was playing on the line with Pastrnak, who had that hat trick. Bertuzzi was also on the top power play. I just don't want people to be fooled into thinking Bertuzzi is like, you know, if you're good, when you're drafting, you're keeping Carlson playoff pool, don't take a look at his numbers lately and think, oh, hey, he's on a hot streak. Like, he's going to be able to keep this up in the playoffs. Like, I feel like once he's back on line three and, you know, like power play two, he's obviously not going to produce like this. But hey, 3 assists today, nothing to sneeze at. And he's a UFA at the end of the year. It'll be fun to see what happens next for Tyler Bertuzzi. I could see him going on to be like a star on another team in the NHL, or I could see him like continuing to do what he was doing in Boston before they started resting everyone. I'm really curious to see what's going to happen with him.
Yeah, Bertuzzi, that, like, what you said about Boston resting everyone makes Bertuzzi a interesting add through the rest of the season. It's not because he's going to be in this place for very long, but while everyone in Boston is resting, he's going to have some pretty decent line mates and some pretty decent deployment. And he's made the most of his time in Boston so far, too. He's taken a few more shot attempts. He's getting in on more offense. There's a whole lot more offense, like an extra half an expected goal per 60 minutes compared to his time in Detroit. And the actual goals difference is actually bigger than that. So he's cashing in on a moment where this is probably good for him contractually too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Depending on what teams want to reward him for. I'm not going to call him a passenger necessarily. Like, he's been involved. I don't think he could sustain exactly what he's doing for an entire season. But Elon, I like what you said. Like, you go for Bertuzzi now. Might not extend to the playoff pools. And depending on where he lands, like, we'll see. He's going to be a tough guy to project next year. Probably somebody I'm not going to be too interested in drafting, because I imagine he'll be with a new team and we won't know his role. And he could drop out of the top six into the middle six, which kind of happened in Detroit and is where he's going to settle in Boston for as long as he's there too.
Yeah, and then also, I guess if we're mentioning Bertuzzi, let's give some kudos to Pavel Zacha, right? A goal and an assist today. Also, like, getting that bump to the top power play with everyone sitting. Overall on the season, Zacha is now at 57 points. He has a chance of sniffing 60, which would be really great. Like, that would be a nice redemption story for a guy who was drafted sixth overall in 2015, kind of like flamed out in New Jersey. He had a couple stretches at the end of his tenure where he was looking like he could be good, but then he would like go cold again. But I think the Bruins are like really happy with him. Like, I think they're really happy with his acquisition. He's been, you know, good with Pasternak when they've played together. And I don't know, actually, I'm curious to see what his contract is, but I have a feeling that he's someone that the Bruins are just happy to have, you know, locked in for a while. I'm just bringing up Cap Friendly now. Oh, yeah, so he's actually UFA after this year. Seems like a really good fit. If I were to guess, I'd say that they extend him, but I'll be curious to see what happens there. So, yeah, two UFA. Boston's got to go for it this year. They're going to lose both these guys.
Yeah, well, I think we talked, I don't know if it was on the last episode of the Patreon cast, like, they're playing really tight with the cap right now, and there's a lot of questions in the offseason, like Orlov, Bergeron, right? Like, all these guys that they've added this year or recently with expiring contracts and what they're going to do with them. Zacha, like, I am always surprised when I see that this is his second 55-60 point season. He did this a couple seasons ago in just 50 games in the 2020-2021 season, but like, he's been here before. The way that he gets here is with a high 5-on-5 shooting percentage, shooting 16% this year, which is a career high. His previous high was 14%, and that was in that 50-game season where he also paced for between 55 and 60 points. So I don't know, actually. Like, he's sort of, he's got this, like, Anders Lee-like pattern where he goes between seasons that seem, where his shooting percentage is too high and then too low, and we don't really know exactly what kind of shooter Zacha is actually going to settle at. I see some other variants working in his favor, like on a shooting percentage. So basically, my expectations for Zacha are, like, 50 points in a middle six center role, but that could all change depending on where he lands. Obviously, he didn't stick in New Jersey, even though I think they did give him some opportunities. Former sixth overall pick back in 2015 of the Devils, and he had his tryouts to be a top six player, and he's sort of like been this like responsible two-way. Even though I say that, I think that's what they wanted him to be, but he was like a combined minus 40 in his last 3 years in Jersey.
Yeah, but their goaltending was so terrible. Who was?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm calling out plus minus now for two. I need to stop it. This is not how we built Keeping Carlson.
Yeah, but Brian, this is fun. This is like the season of these like early draft picks having their redemption stories. Like Barrett Hayton over in Arizona finally breaking out. Dylan Strome looking so good over in Washington. Good for them. And who knows? Maybe Zacha.
Good for them.
Good for them. Okay.
By the way, next up, Nolan Patrick.
No, I don't know about that one. I mean, I don't even. I'd love to see him play a full season. Yeah.
I'd love to see him play like a full week.
Yeah. Poor guy. Okay. Just scrolling back to the top here, because Shams keeps retweeting, even though he's here in the chat with us also. So he's a busy person. But Colorado had their line rushes for today, and Evan Rodriguez is on the top line with MacKinnon and Rantanen. So, you know, that could change. But like going into next week, I mentioned this on Matchup Maximizer yesterday, season finale, that Rodriguez is probably the guy you want. You know, Compher, Nichushkin. Well, Nichushkin's rostered everywhere. But right now, I would take Rodriguez over Compher if he's on that line. But you know, for as long as it lasts. But anyways, okay, Brian. So now going back down the timeline again, we have a Bruins talk. I guess then there was some news tweets talking about this Carter Hart thing and then this Tony D'Angelo thing. Oh, but how about this one here? Minnesota Wild have recalled top prospect Marco Rossi as well as Nick Petan. They're both in Chicago with the minor league squad, so they'll stay there. It'll be interesting to see how everything plays out from here. I mean, this is the kind of thing where like at one point, like early in the year or like at the end of last season, people would have like lost their mind thinking like, it's time, Marco Rossi. But now I think Minnesota's like so good. Like they're rolling. They've got like, you know, either a win or an overtime loss in 8 of their last 10 games. You know, they seem to have that top six pretty much like locked in. Well, I guess Joel Eriksson Ek is injured, so maybe he has a spot there. If he could play, so if he could get that spot with Boldy and Marcus Johansson, that would be huge, right? Right now it's been Freddie Gaudreau subbing in when it was Joel Eriksson Ek for a while. Playing with Matt Boldy is clutch. Of course, Kaprizov is back, so he's back playing with Hartman and Zuccarello. So I don't know. It's just not as exciting. It's not like before where we thought like, oh, guaranteed like spot with Kaprizov because they have no centers. Now they have Eriksson Ek, they have Hartman, they have Gaudreau. Like it just seems like Minnesota doesn't desperately need Marco Rossi like we once thought they did. So probably no fantasy relevance here.
Yeah, well, and unless he gets, I feel like the Wild want him to succeed, but at the same time, they have been pretty vocal about how they haven't been impressed with Rossi's, or haven't seen that Rossi is ready. Again, of course, Rossi missed like a whole season due to COVID, and we've seen what happened with Jonathan Toews, right? It basically ended his career as he continues to deal with symptoms. So we don't know exactly where Rossi's at, although, I mean, he's been really good in the AHL. So that's a positive sign. 50 points in 51 games with Iowa, which, you know, has got to earn you a call-up. The thing is, I think he's still working off what he did not do when he made the team out of camp and then proceeded to do, what did he have, like one assist in 16 games. Yeah, and obviously not a lot of opportunity for Rossi through that stretch, but it's refreshing. It's a good sign to see that Minnesota is ready to give Rossi another shot. We'll watch and see where he slots in it, if he can make an impact. I would be curious, Elon, about Rossi in playoff pools. Like, he might be somebody as a deeper cut. If he really is ready, NHL ready. This is his age 21 season, so it's not like he's a teenager and can't hack it. I think it was just that, like, he missed a full year. He missed, like, you know, COVID interrupted his development just by play stopping, and then it interrupted his development by basically holding him out for a whole season. But I think he's worked his way back just fine. He's basically been a point per game in the AHL over the last 2 years. So I would love to see Rossi be given more of an opportunity this time around. And it's just a matter if the coaching staff has been convinced he deserves it.
Yeah, well, it is a good opportunity. Like I said, like Joel Eriksson Ek is out. He is a guy who's been playing with Boldy, and he's been playing on the top power play. So now Marcus Johansson has been on the top power play instead. I don't know. I guess we'll see. The opportunity could be there for Rossi if he can take a hold of it. So continuing down this list of tweets, Felix Sandstrom played today. So yeah, more stuff about the Flyers. Ilya Samsonov left the game, but then he turned out he was fine. There was like a tweet here saying what happened in the second period when Samsonov left for a bit and the e-bug came in, and his response was, "Sammy never break, yeah? Everyone knows this. It's okay. I feel good. Just a little bit squeezed, feel tight, but nothing crazy. We have best doctors, best staff." So Samsonov's happy.
He's a Russian machine. Never break.
Hey, he learned from another one.
Learned from, Ovechkin.
All right. Then we have Walt Ruff here tweeting about the Canes and how Stefan Nason is back. He missed a game with an injury. Not super fantasy relevant, though he's been someone that I never expected to talk about as much as we did on this season of Kevin Karlsson. So good for him. Like, he got all those power play points. Maybe if you're in a super deep league, you could look at Nason for next week, but probably not. Brian, any comments over there?
He had like a rare five-shot game. He missed Saturday's game against Buffalo, but two games before that, five shots and two assists against Ottawa, and he was on a three-game point streak where he had 10 shots total. Two of those, of course, were on the power play, which is how he's getting his points. 15 of Nason's 35 points this year have come on the power play, thanks to generous top power play deployment. So if you're attacking that power play category in your league, Nason is a decent deep cut any given night that he's in the lineup. But otherwise, not terribly fantasy relevant.
Yep, definitely with you there. So then continuing with the Toronto goalie news, Sheldon Keefe said no change in Murray's status. No surprise there. Won't travel with us. We'll see if we see him again in the playoffs. Also, Cali Yarncroc had an MRI and is apparently maybe going to be okay. The Leafs practice lines, for what it's worth today, had Bunting with Matthews and Marner, and then Tavares with O'Reilly and Nylander. So really, it doesn't matter. Like, for fantasy, Cali Yarncroc doesn't matter anymore. Now that O'Reilly is back, there is not that opening in the top six. And again, for Matthew Nyes, like we talked about before, like, there have been times when there's been openings, but that was when one of these guys, either O'Reilly wasn't in the lineup yet, or he was injured. But O'Reilly's back. He just had three assists in the last game. So yeah. I think that O'Reilly is fine, and no other Leafs forward aside from the top six is relevant.
Yeah, Ryan O'Reilly, we should mention, was on the top power play. That's where he picked up two of his three assists. And that meant that William Nylander was on the second unit with Bunting, Kerfoot, and Lafferty. So just a heads up for Nylander managers, if he's not on that top unit, if O'Reilly is there for the rest of the season, then not much you can do about it, but at least prepare to be disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You're not going to drop Nylander, but maybe when you come to your playoff pools, maybe you like drop him down. I think he was like one of the only Leafs, like, was it last playoffs or the one before? There was one playoffs, I remember, where Matthews and Marner were quiet, and it was Nylander that was like getting all the points. So he's
really good.
He steps up in the playoffs, especially, but he also steps up in the regular season. Nylander's good. We also had a stats tweet here. A lot of stuff going on with the Oilers, right? Because they're amazing. And they are 12-0-1. This was a tweet from Bob Stover. The Oilers since March 12th. The Oilers are 12-0-1 with a 962 points percentage, first in the league. Then a bunch of other stats about how they're like first, second, or third in the league, like goals for per game, goals against per game. Like basically ever since they got Matthias Ekholm, this team can't be beat. Though also it probably helps that Connor McDavid is doing insane things. He crossed the 150 point threshold. We also had definitely some tweets about that, which we'll get to. And Ryan Nugent Hopkins passed the 100 point threshold. First team in a long time to have like 300 point players. McDavid's like the first player in like 20 years to have 150 points. Draisaitl, not too shabby himself. He actually has more points than McDavid in this stretch since March 12th. So the Oilers, it's going to be a fun playoffs. I think
it's going to be fun.
I think this is the year that they do. I know last year they went pretty far. They lost to Colorado. So you can't, like, no shade, yeah. Obviously. But I think now with Stuart Skinner in net, I feel even better.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like I think they could win the conference this year. Maybe the whole thing. Yeah. I'm going to call it. Oilers. That's my pick. I just decided. They're my pick to win the cup this year.
Okay. I wonder, maybe you can look up the current odds and see how outlandish, like how out on a limb you're going with this pick. The one thing, so in this tweet, Stauffer did mention, you know, goals against per game, which is not a terribly helpful number because it's just like, how well is the defense playing?
That's pretty helpful. To talk about a team,
okay,
how well is their defense playing? I think that's interesting.
Yeah, it is a team stat. Okay, I guess I just want to say that the better stat, and the one that I wanted to see when I saw this retweeted by Game Day, is I wanted to see how their goalies were doing and save percentage. Like, yes, they haven't lost in regulation since March 12th. That's the stretch of 13 games. But like, and then it goes on about how the whole team is doing so well offensively. I feel like that could have been mentioned about nearly any 13-game stretch over the last several years in Edmonton. But what you couldn't say is that they were getting 922 goaltending in all situations over these 13 games. If the Oilers ever got good goaltending, it was like for one, two, maybe three games at a time. But this time, they're actually getting fantastic. Fantastic. 922, that's way above league average. And hey, it may not quite be sustainable, but still, this is a big reason why they've been able to do so well over this 13-game stretch. And I feel like it was sort of given short shrift. Not sure if that's the right turn of phrase there. But yeah, and of course...
Do better, Bob Stauffer, with your tweet. Maybe he ran out of room.
Nine of those 13 games have been started by Stuart Skinner, who has a 918 save percentage, which actually means that Jack Campbell has been pretty good in his four starts through this run, too, which is, you know, again, rare that Edmonton would have great performances from one goalie, let alone both. So way to go, Edmonton. I mean, this has been the thing for a while. If the defense and goalies, if one of them can do their job really, really, really well, then this team could be unbeatable and, yeah, vaults in, like, in terms of likelihood to make it deep into the playoffs and contend for the cup.
Yeah, the odds are 9-1 I'm seeing on one site. So that's not bad if you want to place a bet.
How does that, like, where does that put them amongst, is that like the third or fourth best rankings?
All right, next time you're talking, I'll look that up again and then I'll give you more information. I think it was like fourth or something, but okay.
Command shift T.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's try that. Oh, look at you, Brian, there. It's loading up right now. All right, so Bruins 3-1. This is on... Well, I'm not going to promote a betting site, okay, but on a betting site for Ontario. Bruins 3-1. Colorado 5.5-1. Carolina 9-1. Edmonton 9-1. Leafs 9.5-1. Devils 10-1.
Okay. So for Edmonton to be in that Toronto and Carolina group, pretty impressive. And I think their goaltending is a big reason why.
Yeah, probably also the forwards and the defense now. Like, they have it all. They got rid of Tyson Barrie and they replaced him with Matthias Ekholm. It's going pretty well.
It's a huge upgrade. Massive upgrade.
Yeah.
And they miss nothing on the power play.
Yeah, they have like Evander Kane is back. Hyman is doing so well. Like, they finally have depth. It's like it's exciting to see. I'm happy for Connor McDavid to have a real like solid shot at this year. Okay, but anyways, watch them now lose in the first round. But okay, so the Leafs had a tweet about their special teams, by the way, and Erik Gustafsson. So you, Brian, you talked about how Nylander was on the second power play. Joining him at practice today was Morgan Riley, and it was Gustafsson on PP1. So another thing to watch. Obviously, you're not going to drop Morgan Riley going into the last week of your regular season, but yeah, another thing to watch. Like, Gustafsson, we know one thing he's very good at is running a power play. So I think that that's something to be concerned about, because Riley hasn't been that good lately. He only has like 1 point in his last five games. It was a power play assist, for what it's worth, but I guess the Leafs are trying something out, and like, why not? Like, they're already locked into their matchup versus Tampa. And yeah, so who knows if the power play, probably, if I were to guess whatever this is worth, I think that, you know, they'll start with Riley on the top power play. It'll be interesting to see if it's O'Reilly or Nylander as that fourth forward. But I think now we're seeing that they have some other plans in place. And so it's not a sure thing for both like Nylander or Morgan Riley to hold that spot that they've held all year. Next up here, we have a tweet from Craig Morgan. So he is actually, he's an Arizona beat writer, but he's tweeting here about the Seattle Kraken, saying that the Kraken have recalled Joey Decord from Coachella Valley in the AHL ahead of Monday's game against the Coyotes.
Oh, because he's a former ASU Sun Devil.
Yeah, actually, it's saying here, will he get the start in his alma mater's building? So that could be fun. So I think Martin Jones is hurt, right? I think that's the story here. I could just get an update there. But again, like, who really cares? Like, Martin Jones has been so bad. Actually, it's pretty funny. Like, when's the last time a team has made the playoffs? Because Seattle's clinched now with two goalies with sub-900 save percentage. I'm sure that was like common in the 80s, but you'd think you need good goaltending to make the playoffs in the NHL. Maybe the Oilers have done it, actually, if any team has done it. But yeah, anyways, so if you're looking for a goalie start next week, maybe Decord will get a shot for Seattle, and maybe you'll want to stream him in for a game against Arizona, who's maybe not the worst team to, you know, spot start a goalie against. Brian, you must love Decord, looking at your shirt. Former Ottawa Senators top goalie prospect at one point.
My shirt actually says Stanford.
Oh, well, I only saw the color.
The Sens colors. I could have pretended. Yeah. I mean, the Kraken, incredible that they're in playoff contention with .886 goaltending. And it's not because their defense is bad. Their goaltending has just not been good. And we've seen like Grubauer has been like okay, but not so much on the penalty kill. Like, there's reasons why the save percentage is so low. But you would expect better from a team that at 5-on-5 is like, they're not the greatest, but they're middle of the pack. Like, the Kraken are perfectly serviceable defensively. And if you look at all the teams with bad save percentages, like the Kraken ranked 29th in the league. So I'm going to count from the bottom, and let's see when we get to a playoff team. Sharks, Canucks, Blue Jackets, Kraken, Blues, Flames, Kings. There it is. We're at the. Are the Kings officially?
I think the Flames are out. I don't know if it's officially, but like, the Kings also like weren't a playoff team, I don't think, until they finally got rid of Quick and Peterson.
Right. So maybe if you take out the first, you know, quarter there, but then it's Habs, Sabres, Blackhawks, Red Wings, Flyers, Sens, Ducks. And then you get to the Panthers at 18th. It's crazy that Seattle with the 29th, like, bad save percentage, death in the NHL. And the Kraken have made it against all odds. And hopefully they get more out of Philip Grubauer over the next, what is it, 6 remaining years on his contract.
Well, you know, he's been better this year than last year, for what it's worth. So they are in the playoffs, which is nice.
Yeah. And again, he's had some really great runs thanks to like 5-on-5 plays. Just got to figure it out. Stop a puck shorthanded.
Mm-hmm. So the Habs, the next tweet here is from the official Montreal Canadiens account, that they've sent Jesse Ylönen, Raphael Harvey-Pinard, Corey Schoenemann, and Caden Primo to the Laval Rockets. Obviously, the big name here is Harvey-Pinard, right? Who was playing on the top line, like getting like really good deployment, doing pretty well. I guess with the Habs being out, I don't know if this is like for the rest of the season. There's no details here, but I wouldn't be like, whatever. The Habs have nothing to play for. Maybe the Rocket are going for it in the AHL. So maybe it. I don't know. Might be a bummer for anyone who was banking on Harvey-Pinard for this final week of the season.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Rocket in the standings. They're one game above 500. Maybe I should have been a little more informed as to like how that factors into the playoff race. But they seem like they're in the bottom half of their division. I don't know if there's just like more games remaining. to be played in the... Anyway, there you go. I'm looking, as I mentioned on the last show, I'm looking forward to seeing more of Harvey Pinard next year. I think he's earned a look on the top line, certainly in the top six. And I guess we won't see any more from him this season, is what's to know here.
Yeah, I found a Reddit thread on our Habs saying, let's go Rocket for the playoff push. So I guess like maybe they do have a chance still of making the playoffs. This was just from today after seeing this news that RHP got sent down along with these other fellows. Okay, so next, another one of these college players signing, actually. So I mentioned, you know, before we talked about knees for the Leafs, and I mentioned Luke Hughes, who I guess we'll get to a tweet about him. But also we've got Brock Faber here, who was one of the big pieces in that Kevin Fiala trade where Minnesota got Faber and a first round pick. And Faber is someone also who I think people really like. He's a defenseman. He just signed a contract after finishing the season and winning the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. So I don't know. Like I don't know yet, unfortunately, if he's like actually going to be around like for the playoffs, but why not? It kind of reminds me of when Cale Makar joined the Colorado Avalanche for the playoffs, and he was like a big part of that team. And I don't know if Faber's like coming in to pull a Makar because he's like Defensive Player of the Year, not like top power play quarterback potentially, and they have Klingberg for that. But yeah. It'll be interesting to see what he does. It's always fun when, yeah, like I already said before, copy and paste what I said about Matthew Knees. It'll be fun to see someone new come to the team and potentially make an impact right away.
Yeah, 20 years old, Brock Faber, former 45th overall pick back in 2020, took a big step forward in his college scoring this year with the University of Minnesota, 27 points in 38 games, which almost doubles his point totals from last year. And again, like this is a nice time of year where we get to see some guys, get some tryouts. Also interesting Brock Faber fact. I think he's the first person I've ever seen to be wearing glasses in his player profile picture. And they're like prominent glasses.
Nerd.
I was also going to say I was reading up on the AHL playoffs a little bit. They have 23 teams in the postseason.
Like, why not, right? Because the whole point is, I'm sure all the NHL teams are like, yeah, I want my players to have playoff experience.
Yeah, basically the bottom two or three teams in each division miss and everybody else gets in. And the ones who are at the bottom who just get in, they play like a best of three first round. And then it goes to like basically the same setup as the NHL, right. You know, starting with 16 teams and then whittling it down from there.
It's like play-in matchups. That's cool. Brian, so we still have obviously a ton to get to, but it's time for our next break. Did you want to mention more Cupful winners? I did a bad job,
you know,
as
it.
Host. I missed like the commercial break like 10 minutes ago when it was supposed to be.
Oops.
But whatever. We've got all night. So give us our...
Wait, what?
Well, all right. Well, okay. Then fine. The next segment's going to be extra short. But we'll make it worth it with quality. But anyways, Brian, name some Cupful winners.
All right, from let's start at Tier 7 in the Clayson Division. Dubois No Doubters, managed by Andrea. In Weirkosh, NL Rock, managed by 709709. I wonder if that's like a Newfoundland and Labrador area code to really go with the theme. In Mathot, the number two Thrashers fan. I can't wait to hear who the number one is. Took home the championship. The Trash Pandas, managed by Devo. Brought it home in Cuba. In Oduya, the Carbonara Sauce Police, managed by Mike. Congratulations. In Cowan, Kyle, Ricky, Connor, Bobby, managed by Wilson, who is not named Kyle, Ricky, Connor, or Bobby, took it home. And then in Phillips, the trophy goes to Hughes Your Poppy, managed by DK. And then moving into Tier 6, in Betten, Mr. Peanut Butter's Super Team is our champion. In Gunilla, Impressed by W's, managed by N-Tibs. In Roulet, in Tier 6, Beastly, managed by Brett. I assume the B in Beastly stands for Brett. In Svante, Ryan 9139, managed, believe it or not, by Ryan 9139, takes home the hardware. In Krister, Red Lamp District is your champion. And finally, our last Tier 6 champion. I mean, they're in no particular order. This is just the last one I'm reading. But in Basse, it was Dark Princes, managed by Ryan W. Congrats to all our Tier 6 and 7 champions. Woo!
We're not worthy. Okay, Brian, like I said, commercial break. We're going to be back. We got a lot more to talk about. Congrats to all those couple of winners. See you soon. Welcome back to Keeping Carlson. The season finale? I don't know. We're going to keep going all summer, so I don't know what you call the season finale. This is the last episode where we're going to be talking about games in the future, potentially from the regular season. We'll be back definitely with another episode next week. We'll figure it out from there. But Brian, we're going down our news, lines, stats, and goalie tweets over at gamedaytweets.com. And we're up to a stats tweet here from Thomas Drantz that Thatcher Demko, this was a tweet like in the middle of the game versus Calgary yesterday, where the Canucks beat the Flames, pretty much knocking the Flames out of the playoffs. And Thatcher Demko finally let in a goal from Elias Lindholm, which ended a 100-minute-plus shutout streak. Thatcher Demko, man, like, what a return. Like, he stunk at the start of the year. He took his, like, injury vacation and came back, like, so good. And now I just wonder, like, for next year, like, what are people going to do? Like, I know for me, I'm not going to draft any goalie super high, let alone someone who had that struggle. But at the same time, just in terms of like, not in terms of my draft strategy, but just in terms of what I think about the player, I think Thatcher Demko was like really, really good. And I think whatever happened at the start of the year was like weird and not representative. And like we're seeing now, and obviously easy to say now that he's hot again. But yeah, I think next year he could end up being a value pick in drafts. Like I would love to like people to, you know, let him fade and fall in drafts because he only has a 900 save percentage overall. If I could get him among like the, you know, 10th or later goalie taken, that could be really good. I think there's a really good chance. I think also Vancouver could be better, potentially.
Well, I mean, we see this every year, and then there's like a period of instability where they're terrible, and it looks like there's no light at the end of the tunnel.
They have Hronek now. It's all different. Yeah,
and Rick Tocchet, who like does not seem like he's going anywhere, but the front office and management and ownership is still the same, so you can't write off silly things happening in Vancouver. But it's possible. Like we've just seen Demko struggle. We've seen all of Vancouver struggle to start the last two, is it even three seasons? And because of that, Demko has been an option who can hurt you through those opening months, but also sees a lot of value and can also win you a week here and there. I was also gonna like laud Demko for like over the last month, Demko ranks, but even as good as he's been, which is like really good. Like he's playing like 10 save points above what we would expect him to, according to his like expected Fenwick save percentage, but 949 versus the expected 939 given his workload at 5-on-5. He actually ranks 18th amongst goalies in that measure over the last month. A lot of goalies have been an absolute fire. We may or may not get to them, but I'm just going to go down the list of goalies who have out-goalied Thatcher Demko, and maybe over the last month is too big a stretch to really capture how great he's been lately. But Swayman playing 28 save points above his expected number. Shestorkin, Alex Lyon, Korpisalo, Fleury, Jonathan Quick, UC Saros.
Jonathan Quick has been better than Demko?
He has been 20. Oh, in the last month, he's playing 20 save points above his expected number.
I mean, this is the kind of thing that makes
this is at 5-on-5.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that makes me skeptical of a stat when I hear things like this.
Or maybe I think this captures those that first series of starts. Again, maybe my time frame is wrong here. Maybe I should have captured a more recent. But you've also got like your stalwarts like Shestorkin and Swayman and Saros and Allmark and Sorokin and Vasilevsky, but you've also got Fleury, Quick, Korpisalo, Lyon, Montembeau, Vanacek, Binnington is in there, Dostal. So a lot of goalies. Goalieing really hard at 5-on-5 lately, which is, I guess it's been nice to see if you got them and terrible to see if you don't.
Yeah, although, I mean, unfortunately, if you have Quick or Binnington, the whole game isn't played at 5-on-5. And I think the overall numbers to your fantasy team haven't been as friendly. But yeah, so I guess let's continue on here to, we had a tweet. Oh yeah, so the Martin Jones update that I was talking about before. So yeah, Martin Jones, that's why I was saying, like, I'm not sure what the deal is with him. So Dave Haxtell was asked if it's injury or illness, and Haxtell said, he was unavailable. I'm not going to comment, but it wasn't illness. It's a weird thing to say. But okay, so he's not hurt. He is hurt. Do you hate him? Is this a TDA situation where he said something rude? I don't know. But anyway, he's out. Well, he's DeCourt is in.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like, if I were a coach, I would have run out of patience with Martin Jones long ago. So I wonder exactly how bad things could have gotten. Like, but I've gone from uninterested in Martin Jones to basically off the radar. Like, I wonder where he lands next year. He did have that like one run that really seemed great, but we dug into it a bit and we were surprised that even while he was winning like 16 in a row or whatever, he still wasn't playing that well. Unrestricted free agent next year. I'm sure some team will take Martin Jones and make them like make him their backup or challenge for the backup position in camp. But this won't help.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, yeah, like you said, he's a backup, right? So, like, this year he challenged for starter, and that was, like, really surprising and unexpected, I think. And obviously Chris Drieger got injured, and, like, I think Seattle sort of had to scramble a little bit. But, yeah, he signed for $2 million this year for a one-year deal. I could see something similar, maybe 1.5 or $2 million for Martin Jones. Yeah, and like you say, as a backup, but maybe that's something that could challenge, but I doubt it. Okay, next up here, Brian, we go to a Mark Lazarus tweet about Seth Jones, who had 2 goals in the game yesterday. You know, Chicago still got creamed, but nice to see Seth Jones do something because he's obviously had himself a bit of a rough season. That was his second 2-goal game of his career. And like, I guess we're now going to see Seth Jones end the season. Like, obviously, I'd say disappointing. I think it's fair to say disappointing for anyone who drafted him. Like, he's at 35 points in 69 games. It's a 42-point pace when he was a 50-plus guy last year. Obviously, the Chicago team last year was very different. They had a lot of great players, unlike this year. But yeah, I guess we'll have to see what's the, you know, what Martin Jones is going to be worth moving forward in fantasy. Like, next year, I don't think I'd leave him undrafted.
You mean Seth?
Oh, yeah, Seth Jones. Well, yeah. Martin Jones, I guess we already discussed. And yeah, I think we know that he's not going to be worth drafting. Seth Jones, I guess, will be worth drafting, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's kind of similar like next year as he was this year.
Well, I've got one for you, or at least a benchmark. I would take Tony D'Angelo before Seth Jones if I was drafting for next year today. Like, I would assume that works out. D'Angelo gets around 50 points again next year. It's been an awful year for Seth Jones, and he's only on a 42-point pace because he has scored 12 times on 172 shots, which is a 7% shooting percentage, which is twice his, basically twice his career number. Maybe I'm being a little exaggerating, but you get the point. This shouldn't happen. Seth Jones hadn't scored, like, he hasn't scored this way at all before. Ever in his career. Once. Okay. 12 goals in 75 games on 152 shots. The next year in Columbus, he took 3 shots per game and scored 16 goals, but that's because he took 250 shots. I don't like what the future holds for Seth Jones for as long as he's in Chicago. He's going to be on that list of power play one quarterbacks that I might not even be that interested in drafting. You know, 2.5 shots per game is nice. He might block a couple shots per game and 1.5 hits, but there's not a whole lot to love about what Seth Jones offers you in fantasy. So I think he's fallen way down the draft boards, and he's someone that I would rather avoid. Maybe I'd try him as like my fourth defenseman, but like I said, I'd rather take Tony D'Angelo.
Yeah. I mean, I like Jones as like a late pick as like a good, like solid floor because of the peripherals. But man, like Chicago was so bad this year, but like they did have Patrick Kane and Max Domi doing pretty well. You know, next year they don't have even those guys. Like, who are they going to have? Like, if you look at their lineup now, but hey,
maybe Bedard.
Maybe Bedard. Well, that would help.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, though he did score 2 goals in the last game. So we'll see what he does moving forward. Speaking of people hitting some nice numbers there for the season, well, I guess that wasn't Seth Jones, but some people we talked about before, but Mark Scheifele's game-winning goal yesterday for Winnipeg was his 40th of the season. First time in his career he hit the 40-goal mark. Pretty good for someone who, like, going into the season was, like, the news around Mark Scheifele was, like, he doesn't want to be here. Like, you know, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people were probably concerned. I was a little bit concerned. Like, if someone, like, clearly doesn't want to be there, how valuable is he going to be in fantasy? But he ends the season with 40 goals. I know that we talked earlier on when he was scoring a lot of goals that you were saying he was riding a bit of a high shooting percentage. I know Scheifele's not generally known for being, like, a huge goal scorer. Like, he's been a solid point-per-game player forever. But obviously, yeah, this is the first time he's hit 40. What do you think the chances are, Brian? What would you put the odds at for if he's going to hit 40 again next season?
Like, it could happen. I think this is, like, the upper side of what we'd expect for Scheifele's goal scoring. And in the past, what we've mentioned for Scheifele is, like, he's always been an efficient shooter. Like, he's basically been between a 15 and 20% shooter for his entire career. The thing is that he has historically taken like fewer than 2.5 shots per game, sometimes as low as 2 shots per game. This season, he is on the higher end of that at 2.5 shots per game, and that's one of the reasons that Scheifele has found his way to 40 points. What I find interesting about the way Scheifele has gathered his points this year is that he only has 25 assists. That is easily the lowest number of his career, like since breaking out. He had a 32 assist year, which in 15-16, which was basically the first year that he really showed up as an NHL top line player. And since then, his other lowest total was 37 assists. So he's missing a bunch there. I can't totally put my finger on why. I think he's a little less involved on the power play than he's used to being. Like his power, he has 20 power play points, but 11 of those have come from goals. I think generally he's used to seeing more than 9 power play assists in a year. But I like Scheifele because he's a super efficient shooter, and I like the fact that he's shooting more this year. And that's why I could see him putting up another 40 next year. And if the assists come, I could see him, you know, he's been a really solid point per game player basically his whole, like the last 7 years. And I can see Scheifele just easily getting back to that status next year. I'm not thinking he's fallen off just because he's on a 67 point pace.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And, you know, Scheifele still does have one more year left in his contract. So whether he wants to be there or not, I guess it'll depend what Winnipeg wants to do, but it's not like Winnipeg is like a team that, you know, isn't good. Like they're likely making the playoffs this year, like looking at the playoff picture right now. And after their win yesterday, they're in the second wildcard spot. I mean, it's close. So they have one game in hand over Calgary, and they have 91 points, and Calgary has 90 points. So probably they'll get in over Calgary.
Yeah. Money Puck has Winnipeg at 81% and Calgary at 16%.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see how the playoffs go. We'll see if they can pull off an upset against either like Vegas or Colorado or whoever ends up as the division winner that they play. So, okay, Brian, next up, another goal milestone here. Jordan Eberle notched his 20th goal for the Kraken. The Kraken now have 520 goal scorers. That was from Allison Lucan. Do you want to try to name the other four Kraken 20 goal scorers?
Okay.
You could do this.
At least Bjorkstrand.
Oh, actually.
Oh, no.
No. He has 19. He might get
so
there.
Close.
He might get
okay.
there.
Okay. Beniers.
Yep. 23 goals.
McCann.
Yeah, 39 goals.
Schwartz.
Barely, but yes, 20 goals. Yeah. One more. Well, this one's harder.
Is it? It's not Sprong.
It is.
It is. Sprong, oh, 21 it's Sprong. Goals.
Yeah,
good one. There you go. He made it.
And
yeah.
Ellie Tolvanen and Brandon Tanev close behind with 16.
You know, I have to admit, like, I'm kind of annoyed at this stat that the Kraken have 520 plus goal scores, and they're, if Bjorkstrand could notch one more, they're at 6. You know, it just like emphasizes how difficult it is to roster any of these guys in fantasy because they just take turns scoring, except for Jared McCann. He's been the one guy who you've almost never regretted rostering this whole season. Even Vince Dunn, who like you definitely haven't regretted over the second half of the season rostering. But there's been a lot of sharing the wealth in Seattle, and it makes me not that, like, I don't know, Elon. There's not a lot of teams that I specifically stay away from. It's not that I'd stay away from Kraken. I guess it's just that beyond McCann and Beniers, there's someone who's going to be like really interesting to me on my draft list next year. How about you?
Yeah, I mean,
or
obviously,
I'll add Dunn in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you. But I think that Beniers could be like a good, like if you could get him pretty late in drafts next year, you know, like everyone was excited about him going to this year because he had like a point per game and like whatever it was, 7 games at the end of last year. Maybe he was getting overdrafted. But I think now people will be like, yeah, okay, he's like a 50, 60 point guy. Like, okay. But it's like, he's super young, right? And he was already a top line player. Now with a year of experience under his belt, I think, and we'll see how he does in the playoffs. But I think Beniers could end up being a nice value pick next year, depending on where he's being taken.
I wonder if he could be like the Kuznetsov like surprise, you know, when you were able to draft him low because he had had a bit of a disappointing stretch, and then he was amazing, and then of course this year hasn't gone like super smoothly for him, but maybe next year can be a really great season for Beniers. I agree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's been a lot of players. Like, I remember Svechnikov, his first season, like, full season wasn't, like, that amazing. And then he, like, really took off the next year. So, like, not all of these high pedigree prospects, like, just come out great. Like, he might win the Calder. It's, like, a very open race right now. I think my pick for the Calder right now, Brian, would be Skinner on Edmonton.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay. Though I know I've been seeing a lot of people, it's also really hard. I don't know like about the non-fantasy stuff, right? So I know a lot of people are saying like Owen Power has been like super impressive, but it's just like he's not putting up the points.
Yeah. Like, so, and you could say Jake Sanderson too for like the exact same reason. So yeah, I feel like one of these guys is going to get a nomination, like a non-point scorer. But yeah, Beniers, Skinner, and maybe like I would all homer pick Sanderson. I mean, Logan Thompson was your lock for a while. And then he just hasn't been able to.
But it was looking good, yeah. He got injured for too long anyways.
Yeah. And then he didn't play great when he came back.
And he got hurt like right away.
Yeah.
Andy's saying, I think Grubauer is going to be a good late round pickup next year. That's a quote from me last year. And then I came 13th place in Kakupful. So, but yeah, I didn't. Well,
but
I spent
he wasn't
too much
a late round pick.
I spent too much on the draft.
What did you, I don't mean to rub it
a
in.
A lot.
Do you remember?
Like $16. I don't know. Like
and a late round pick would be like $2 to $4.
Yeah, if you can get him late, then sure. Because like I don't want to draft a goalie early anyways. But also, we'll see who the other goalie is. Like maybe Chris Drieger is back, and now he challenges for starts. Maybe Joey Decord finally gets a chance. So I don't think it's like a sure thing that Grubauer is a volume guy. But could be. All right, Brian, we still have a ton to get to, okay? But I think we've covered a lot. It's been like an hour here. So let's end part one of the episode. Oh, before we do, did you want to name? Oh, no. Okay, we'll do that later. We'll save that for part two. So if you want to hear about more of this Hall of Champions, you'll have to go and check. You probably already have the episode downloaded. So just check your podcast feed, wherever you get your podcast. If you don't have it already downloaded, that means you're not subscribed to Keeping Carlson, which is like, come on, you should. I mean, we're putting out episodes. They're all there. You could have gotten the Matchup Maximizer last week, the season finale of Short Shifts. Two great shows last week. So yeah, we're going to keep the content coming. So make sure you're subscribed. But we're going to take a stop right now. See you in part two, where we're going to continue going through all of these awesome tweets from what's been going on over the past few days. See ya.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Oh, to me or to them?
It was like a Spice Girls. You said stop right now.
Oh, okay. I did. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye.